Our good friend Carol down in Florida has seen
Carol, this. Loyal viewer.
Loyal Carol. She's just putting in a new garden, some new drip tape stuff. Send us some goodies. Some
goodies?
Well, she sent some wild elderberry jelly.
Elderberry jelly. Now, that elderberry will cure what ails you.
Yeah, it's got some good antioxidants in it. Mm-hmm. She said she had to brave the gators to get out there and pick that for us.
Uh-oh.
And I have to admit, I got into that a little bit Saturday morning. And also, she sent you some cowboy candy. Look at there.
Cowboy candy. Some sugared jalapenos.
She said, probably best if I didn't try none of those, just let you have them.
Yeah.
But I may be feeling a little bit brave.
What you want to try first?
Well, let's try the elderberry jelly first.
Okay. We got a little muffin there.
Yeah, I got it all dolled up for you.
That's good stuff.
That's better than any muscadine jelly I've ever had.
Now, I've never grown any elderberries.
No, elderberries is kind of a new thing that's hopped on in the last few years as far as cultivating them and growing them. And there's been a lot of stuff written out there about them. A lot of people are talking about the health benefits of it. A lot of people are juicing them and other things. But these are wild ones that they grow down in Florida. We don't grow wild ones here. So it's interesting to know they grow wild ones in Florida.
Yeah. All right, let's try the cowboy candy.
Whoa. That's yours right there now.
Okay. Okay, you loaded mine up there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, it's jalapenos and some more things in there. She said it was more like a sweet heat.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
She said these were for you.
You can try one. Pretty good. You got some sugar in there, take off the heat a little bit. Every now and then you get a few of them seeds to get you.
Turn a little red on there.
Get you going a little bit. That's pretty good.
It is pretty good. I don't find that, it's getting a little warm now. It is a little warm around. Now the front end is sweet.
It ain't overwhelming though.
No, but you taste that, the flavor on the front end and the heat comes in on the back end.
I really like those. That's making a good little
snack.
Now
how would you eat that?
I like them on a Ritz cracker like that. We like to put them on like a cheese board.
I'm going to follow that up with some elderberry jelly.
Go for it. So we like to put them on a cheese board, have some good cheese on there, some good sausage or some salami or some crackers, some mustard. Anyway, thank you, Carol, for sending us those goodies there. We really do appreciate it. Send us some soap, too.
Some soap, too, yes. Some soap and some goodies, and we appreciate it, Carol.
All right, let's say hey to everybody. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. We're really excited to have you with us tonight. We got a really good show planned. We're going to talk a little bit about planting carrots a little later. Right now, we're just doing a little show and tell and going through what's going on in the garden. I want to talk about how dry it's been and something that I ain't never seen happen before. So we were last Friday at my consultant farm, which is a little bit south of here. We were putting some transplants in the ground. We had an area that we had did the whole tarp and till thing because they had a lot of Bermuda grass. And that's, from what I found, that's really, without herbicides, the only way to get rid of Bermuda grass is aggravate to death and then keep tarping it. So, and it's been real dry. It hadn't rained in over a month. We pulled the tarp off. We laid our drip tape, turned it on, to start seeing the water spot. I get it.
Yeah.
To put our transplants in every foot there. And I've never seen water or dirt be so dry where it repelled water. It just puddled up on top and wouldn't soak in.
Yep.
It just blew my mind.
I've seen that before several times. We used to have a problem when it got dry like it is now. We'd have what we call localized dry spots in lawns. And those would just go bad, and they'd be like circular motions, and they'd take a good bit of water to bring them back. Somehow or another, and I don't know exactly how this happens, but when it gets that dry, the soil particles change their charge, and it repels that water.
That's as deep as you want to go on that?
That's about as deep as I want to go on that, but I've seen it before, and it's bad, bad dry. But dry and hot and dry.
So what we had to do, we planted four or five rows with collards, broccoli, stuff like that. And by the time we got done, that first row of collards we planted, even though we had them emitters running, was looking pitiful. So we had to plan B and put some overhead on it just to get that soil back saturated.
Once it gets as dry as it is now, you need to water before you plant and then water after you plant.
Now, I'll tell you what happened to me yesterday. So I had a video come out. Actually, this happened to me on Tuesday. I got my first fall crops in the ground on Wednesday. Or on Tuesday, the video came out Wednesday. Getting confused here. Anyway, I planted them on Tuesday morning. And I let my drip run about 2.5 hours. And I had to teach Tuesday afternoon. And I was worried because it got hot. 95 or so on Tuesday. And I got worried. I said, man, I got to get home. And plants, I probably got to go home and get an overhead sprinkler on them. And I got home, and I'll be dogged if the good Lord hadn't blessed me with a couple tenths of rain.
Really?
I don't know where it come from, but I got home, and you can just, the dirt just looked like it had a little rain. I went in and asked my wife, did it rain? She said, yeah, a little bit. I walked out there to that plot, and man, it just looked pretty out there, and plants was doing well. And just made me feel good.
I don't care how much you irrigate, that rain water from heaven just makes it look so much better.
It sure does. It sure does. So I got my first cool weather crops in the ground and going to get some more in the ground towards the end of this week.
I got a little bit of something I want to talk about here in just a minute.
Okay.
So, you know, last week we eat these here from James over at George Farms.
Yeah. I talked to another fella in Texas the other day that he said he wasn't very far from them at all.
Yeah, well, I've talked to James a couple times since then because I had some questions I want to ask him. These are the best pickled okra I have ever ate. And I've done pickled okra before, and I thought I was okay with it till I ate his.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked to him on the phone. I said, James, we got to talk about this pickled okra a little bit, and you got to give me some insight. He said he got the recipe off from that book we used to sell called Pickle Pantry, which is a wonderful book. We don't sell it anymore, but it is a great book.
You still
book.
Get it online.
You still get it online called Pickle Pantry. It's probably one of the best ones out there.
Mm-hmm.
I asked George, well, these things are really crispy. And he said the trick to it is using one of those stone crocks to ferment them in or let them age in.
Hmm.
There's something about that stone.
Oh, so he don't just put them straight in the jar.
No, and that's what I have done in the past. Excuse me.
That garlic could get you.
That's what I've done in the past, and they didn't turn out this well. He said there's something about that stone crock and doing it in bulk that really does something for them. So I did a little bit of research on this right here.
Mm-hmm.
And that stone crock keeps the temperature in there more regulated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of people online recommend. So I'm thinking about getting me one of these stone crocks. And I found a USA made one in Ohio from Ohio Stoneware. And they make one. They make several. But they make one that's a 3 gallon that I'm thinking about getting. And it's got the weights on everything. And if anybody out there has got any opinion or experience with these, put it in the comments and let me know what you think. But I definitely want to go with the USA made one, and that's the best one I have found. So I may order me one of these. I don't think we do enough preserving out of the garden, and pickling and things like that is a perfect way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Sauerkraut.
Yeah.
I like sauerkraut. And I know we're from the South, but I like it.
I do too.
And I'm going to do some of that this winter. But you need one of these stone crocks to do that in. So that's where I'm at on that.
Now I got plenty. You want to get you a 10-pound stone crock, I got plenty of okra to fill it up.
Well, I may get the 5 gallon as big as I may.
Get the five gallon, we'll do a heap of okra.
We have this book right here called Preserving the Harvest. It has some pickling recipes in there and has some jam recipes and all other stuff in there, which is a good book.
You make a mess over here.
My point is, if you ain't doing some pickling and some fermenting and things like that, you need to do. I'm going to start doing more of it. I don't think we do enough. And I'm going to tell you, that right there, last night I was sitting in bed and just in my, not bed, my recliner, watching TV, and I just got craving. All of a sudden, I had to go outside and get this here pickled okra.
Hmm. Speaking of pickling and preserving, I've got cucumbers out the wazoo. And you can have them right there, but with them would make some good pickles as well.
I seen a recipe the other night on there, a fella put on there with smoked salmon. He cut his cucumbers about 2 inches and he put smoked salmon dip on top of them. They call them cucumber cups.
Huh.
That's nothing.
I think I've had them at a fancy hotel or reception before.
Yeah, I swung a craving on me too.
Huh. Last thing I want to mention before we get into our carrot talk. Had a fella, so I had a video come out on, was it Tuesday, about our chicken, going and getting some of that good chicken litter compost stuff. And I knew just as soon as I figured some people had never seen what a chicken farm looks like. And so I wanted to show that in the video, but I knew just as soon as I showed that, somebody was gonna, one of the animal humane advocates was gonna jump on me about that. And so this one guy commented on, I wanna read his comment and kind of explain my stance a little bit. So he said, "Nice Nazi chicken concentration camp. I'd rather not grow my plants on the faces of tortured animals." So this is my response to that. As long as Americans insist on eating processed chicken from fast food places, there's going to be commercial chicken farms. Just the way it is. Now, you don't have to eat chicken from those. And a lot of times we kill our own chickens, and I'll be the first one to tell you that grass-fed or free-range chicken tastes a lot better than what they grow in them big chicken houses. But the demand is out there, and so they exist. All we're doing is getting the waste from them. Just because we're using that chicken litter doesn't mean we necessarily promote
that. Don't shoot the messenger.
Right. So we're just using the waste, and it's clean.
And if you are against the way chickens are raised in chicken houses, don't be eating no chicken nuggets.
Yeah, don't go to McDonald's or don't, you know. Now, you can have that stance if you don't ever eat fast food chicken or processed chicken, but a lot of times people that say those kind of things.
And I've not eaten at McDonald's in years and years and years.
Right.
I have eaten a chicken nugget in my time, but it's been a long time ago.
So, that it is what it is. The demand's out there, so those things exist, and we're not sitting here carrying a flag for them. We're just using the good stuff that comes out of them.
Yep.
All right. So let's get into carrots, because we're getting into, it's October now, and October is time to overwinter carrots. Mm-hmm. Now, I usually aim for early October, but it's still a little hot. So probably push back to the middle of October planting them. And I was doing some online research. I kind of wanted to see what the upper range of carrot overwintering was, and I've been overwintering carrots for years, but most of the United States can overwinter carrots.
Even in zone six?
On up there pretty close. Some places, they would say the tops will die back, but you'll still get some root production there. So overwintering carrots is really good because they taste a lot sweeter when they get them cold temps on them.
I'll testify to that.
So first of all, I want to go through the types of carrots and some of the varieties we carry. We've added a lot of carrots lately, and really, I'm really proud of how many, the diversity of carrot varieties we have. So I got a little chart here.
Another chart.
To show the different kind of shapes and types of carrots. So you've got a Nantes, a Danvers, a Chantenay, and what we call an Imperator. And all these have slightly different characteristics, and some of them are better in other soil types than others. Your Nantes here is a more blunt carrot, okay? It doesn't have a lot of taper to it. It's kind of the same width all the way down. This makes a real good storage carrot because it's uniform, fits in jars good. You've got your Danvers carrot, which is more your Bugs Bunny type carrot. It has really broad shoulders and a fairly sharp taper there. Your Chantenay carrot is your short, stubby carrot. And if you've got hard or clay soils, that's the go-to for you. Now these things, even though they're shorter, these things will produce really well, and you get a lot of carrot from these things even though they're shorter. So if you got harder soils, Chantenay is the way to go. And then the Imperator is your real long slender carrot, and the advantage of these is you can pack a lot of these in a small space.
But you need sandy soils.
You need relatively
sandy,
softer soils.
High organic content soils.
Right. These things need to be able to penetrate.
So
on down
in the last
there.
Few years, there's been a lot of prepackaging carrots in the grocery stores, and we see a lot of these baby carrots in there.
Uh-huh.
What variety would you say that is?
So, in fact, we'll talk about this in a minute if I can find it here. So this Viper carrot, which is an Imperator type, is one that is actually commercially grown for baby carrots.
I did not know that.
Okay. And the reason is, so this is a real long, slender carrot. And this variety was developed because they can get baby carrots, they look for about a 2-inch piece. They can get more 2-inch pieces. So what they do is they basically cut these things up and round off the ends to get the baby carrots.
Really?
Yeah. So they can get more baby carrots out of one carrot with these than they can the other types. And they can grow these really tight spaces. So that's what this variety was developed for. Now, even if I'm going to plant a bunch of these this year.
But you ain't going to saw them up and round them off.
Right. No. I'm going to use them whole. But it's supposed to be a really, really good variety. And I'm not sure anybody else has this variety out there, this Viper. So that's the ones they use for the baby carrots. They take these long ones here. They cut them, round them off. And that's where you, so it's a little bit wasteful. Maybe they use the carrot shavings for carrot salad or something like that.
Animal feed or whatever.
Let's get into some of the varieties we got and what types they are. So you hold that. We'll start out with the Danvers. So we have one Danvers variety. It's your kind of an old heirloom called Danvers 126. I've grown this one many years. This is a really good variety here. As far as the Nantes go, moving this way, we got several different varieties. Probably my favorite carrot variety of them all is this Bolero right here. It's a hybrid. This is a go-to
highly
variety.
Highly productive.
Very, very productive. We've also got this one, which is an old standby, the Scarlet Nantes, which I've grown for a while. This is a great, great carrot if you want to put some carrots up. Real nice uniform sticks on that. And then this new one we've got, which I'm excited to try this year, this Gold Nugget carrot. This is a Nantes type that is a yellow carrot. And the yellow carrots are really, really good.
So if you had somebody that's growing with carrots for the first time, tell me which one you'd recommend. I'll tell you which one I've been recommending.
For the first time, I would say that the Bolero and the Yellowstone, which we'll get to in a minute, would probably, of the ones I've grown, those two right there are probably some of my favorites.
This is the one I've been recommending, is this purple, deep purple carrot, because it's such unique coloring in there. I figure if somebody's going to get hooked on carrots, this is a good one to get them hooked on.
Now that would be. And that's a new one we got. I've got to try that one this year. As far as the Imperator type carrots go, that's the ones we have the most varieties of. All your purple carrots are usually Imperator type. So you've got the deep purple here, which we have in pelleted. We have the purple haze here. So the difference between the purple haze has an orange core. The deep purple has a dark red or purple core. We also have a new variety coming. We should have on the website soon called Black Nebula, which is even darker than the deep purple. Mm. And it's supposed to be really good for juicing. And I didn't know this. Some people use the dyes from these purple carrots to make clothes and stuff.
Wow.
The other two Imperator types we have the Yellowstone here, which I said is a consistent performer for me, a really good one. And then the Viper, which I mentioned, is this really long one that I'm excited to try.
Oh, we threw this.
Not quite.
Okay.
And then one more, we do have, it's not on the site yet, it should be soon. We do have a Chantenay variety we're working on adding. It's called Royal Chantenay for all of you folks with harder soils. That's gonna be your go-to carrot. That should be on the site soon. So we've got lots of different options. With many of the varieties, you've got a raw option, raw seed or pelleted seed. For the stuff we have pelleted, we also have in quarter pounds. So you want to grow a lot of carrots like I do, you can get the quarter pounds.
If you plant these carrots by hand, which is the way I do a lot of times because it's just easy to do, these pelleted makes life a lot easier to shake them out there. Or if you're using our Hoss Garden Seeder, the pelleted works fine. The raw seeds are a little bit aggravating to seed by hand, and they won't work in the seeder either.
Yeah, my rule of thumb is if I'm using the seeder, I use pelleted seeds. If I'm doing by hand, I'll use the raw seed. But it's up to you. The pelleted does make it easier to spread them out, but I like planting mine thick. So
your soil type and your choice of what kind of carrot you would grow would dictate the variety you would buy. Probably more the soil type.
Right, right. You know, if I wouldn't try to grow the imperators unless I had some really well-drained soil. The Nantes seem to be pretty tough. They can get down there pretty easy.
I would say this is one of the most popular varieties, or type, I ain't gonna say variety, type of carrot for the home gardener.
Yeah, and those are really good if you're gonna store them. Miss Hoss put some in jars last year, some that I grew, some yellow ones. They look really nice. Let's talk about planting real quick. So as far as carrots go, and I'll use my picture from my onions last week, because it's kind of the same deal. So I like to plant my carrots on double rows with drip irrigation in the middle. And what, besides saving space, maximizing space in the garden, getting two rows per one line of drip tape, the main reason is for weed suppression. Those carrot tops will shade out that middle area, and it really helps you keep the weeds under control. When you overwinter carrots, they're gonna take several months to grow out, and those winter weeds, you wanna keep those at a minimum. So we basically put our drip lines, which are the dotted lines here, we put those 2 feet apart. I have done it 3 feet, anywhere between 2 and 3 feet. You can do 2, 2.5, 3. And then you just plant on each side. If you use our drip tape layer, it makes a nice little furrow on each side of that tape. And you can just sprinkle them along that furrow.
Plant your really carrots well. Thick. It's hard to get carrots too thick.
Plant them real thick. We don't ever thin ours because I'm not going for all the same size carrots. We like small carrots. Big carrots.
Keep them wet till they germinate, and I'm not going to act like I'm no carrot expert because I ain't. I can grow them. Travis does a lot better job with them than I do. I tend to not have as much patience as I need growing carrots. You got to have patience to get them up. They're slow to germinate. Got to keep them babies wet to get them up, and you got to be careful not to let the weeds overtake you.
Right. So you need a good stale weed seed bed or weed seed bank. And the tarps are what great way to get that or keep it cultivated. You don't want to have to, them carrots, while they germinate, you don't want them competing with weeds. And then keep, once I plant my carrots, if I don't have any rain coming soon, I'll let the drip run all night long. Let that bed soak, and you want to keep it fairly soaked for the first 7 days or so until they germinate. That is the trick. A lot of times people get it wet and they don't keep it wet enough. Keeping it wet with carrots.
Now carrots, to me, there's two things that you can grow in the garden that has substantial difference in taste than what you go buy in the grocery store. One of them is carrots, the other one was English peas. Mm-hmm. English peas and fresh carrots that you grow out of the garden have a completely different taste and flavor profile than what you go buy at the grocery store. The homegrown carrots that are overwintered, man, those things
are sweet.
They're sweet. They got a real earthy.
They have a different smell to them.
They do. They are just absolutely delicious. And I know carrots is cheap to buy in a grocery store, but if you never had any homegrown carrots boiled in some chicken broth, you ain't lived yet.
So that's right.
Good stuff. English peas is the same thing to me. I don't care for English peas out of a can, but fresh English peas out of the garden,
hard to beat. One more thing, as far as the optimal germination temperature for carrots is between, I would say, 75 and 85 degrees. That's why I'm waiting a little bit for the soil to cool down. If you plant them when the dirt's too hot, they won't germinate very well. As far as fertilizing real quick, we'll use our FAD system. So when we make our furrow, they'll put our drip tape in, we'll put a little bit of that chicken manure stuff in there, and then we'll lay our drip tape on top of it. And then I will hit them with 20-20-20 probably every 2 to 3 weeks throughout the growing cycle.
And some micro boost.
Get some nice tops on those guys. As far as weeding goes with carrots, and we've got a video out there on YouTube about this. If you do it this way, keeping the weeds out is really, really easy. You're just gonna make one or two passes with your single wheel hoe between these middles here. I usually just single wheel hoe with 3 teeth on it, simple setup. And then where your drip tape is between your double rows, this baby right here is gonna be your go-to tool. And we got this in a single tine cultivator. We've got it in a short handle and a long handle.
Well, the trick in this baby right here is you can go real close to the outside of where those carrots are, which you point down and cultivate. But there in the middle where your drip tape is at, you turn that bad boy sideways right there, and you can scoot right through there and not get into your drip tape and still get
yeah,
them weeds
you
out.
Just barely grade the top of the dirt.
Works ideal for carrots. I tell you, it works good for onions too.
Onions and carrots. So you basically lay it down like that and scoot it across the soil like that, and it does the trick. All right. Lots of good carrot talk there. If you have any more questions about planting carrots, growing carrots, varieties of carrots, let us know in the comments below. I did want to mention, so when we overwinter them, plant them in October, we're usually harvest them early spring. I can also plant another round in early spring that will come off in May. So I can get two crops of carrots per year. We've got some questions from last week that we want to answer.
All right.
And if we answer your question on the show, send us an email to cusserve@hosstools.com and we'll send you a nice little prize. So our first question comes from the Green Man. And he says, I'm getting attacked. I wrote attached. I guess he meant attacked. I'm getting attacked by worms and hoppers in my sweet corn patch. I heard you guys talk about using spinosad to control these pests. Can you share some more info on this product? Before they eat everything I've got. Thanks, love the show, Jay.
If you grow a sweet corn in the fall, you're gonna have to treat for worms. In the springtime, I do a lot of times, especially if I notice I'm getting some pressure, but in the fall of the year, it's just absolutely a necessity to plan on getting worms in your sweet corn, and you wanna start early. Of all the natural or organic pest control products that works good on worms, spinosad would be the one I would pick there. It's the quickest and best one. The spinosad is a naturally fermented product that is poisonous to those worms. It's not necessarily poisonous to us. So it is a safe product to use. I would go through there, spray the top over the top as best I could, and get it on that silk, if you can get it on that silk also. BT works as well, but BT, you have to be a little more ahead of the game with that, being a little more preventative on it. When you start seeing any worm damage whatsoever on the leaves and when your corn's about waist high or so, you better be getting after them. If you let them tassel out and your corn starts making, you may be too late to the game. So spinosad is the way to go, especially in the fall. Hit them, I would say, at least once a week and stay after them, and you'll be okay.
I have done it as frequent as twice a week. Spray late in the evenings. I think the mixing rate on this is 2 ounces to the gallon. So in this quart container here, you got 16 applications or 16 gallons you can mix up.
It's Omni-certified. Certified for organic production, but that's the one to go to right there. Don't be ashamed to use it. Use it and use a lot of it on your fall corn.
That's right. You can also use it on your fall brassicas, your cabbage, anything like that where you have worms eating on it.
So Mr. Hutch Milkerson asked, I would like to use drip tape in my new garden, but I will have to gravity feed some relatively turbid pond water. Can this be done? Probably looking at 2,000 feet of tape on the upper end.
A couple things to mention here, and we get this question a lot as far as can I gravity feed drip tape? Yes, you can, but it's really not feasible for most people. And there's a website out there that does all the physics and the calculations behind it, but you basically have to get that tank about 30 to 40 feet off the ground to generate enough pressure to feed the drip tape. For most people, you're not gonna be able to build a structure that tall to do it. So you're probably gonna need a pump of some sort because you don't wanna put a, even if you do put a tank that high off the ground, you don't have any way to refill it unless I guess it's just catching rain. Second thing is if you're doing this relatively turbid pond water, you're gonna need a more filter than what we provide in our drip kits. You'll need something like a swimming pool filter or something like that to catch all that. There'll be a lot of particles in there you're gonna wanna catch before it gets to your drip system.
And you gotta have pressure to run through that system. So the short answer is no and no. It's not feasible. I never say never, but this is, when you talk about gravity feed drip tape and you start irrigating out of a pond, I just normally just say no.
Right.
It's best not to go down that road.
You can run into a lot of obstacles.
You need to be working off of city water, well water, or something where you got adequate pressure, at least 20 pounds.
And relatively clean water.
You need clean water.
All right, and our last question, this based on a comment we made last week during the show, Ernie Tiller says, hold on, what's the difference between dirt and soil?
Tell you, Ernie, what the difference is. For some reason or another, every professor in this country that has ever taught a horticulture class, when people come there for their first day of class, that's the first thing they tell them. So if you're ever in a big crowd of people and you say dirt, there's going to be somebody out there that took a horticulture class that's going to
get on you.
It happened back, we was in a big meeting up in Grand Rapids and it happened up in there.
We had a customer come by and get on me too.
We had a customer come by and he's the same thing. If you question them, every one of them has had a horticulture professor that just harped on this. Now, years ago, I had a lady get on to me. I was up in Rochester, Minneapolis, believe it or not, of all places. One of the most horribleous weeks I ever spent in my life.
Rochester, Minnesota.
I was at a show up there for a week. Anyway, a lady got on to me there, and she was a horticulturist too. They, in the South, we use the terminology dirt and soil a lot, but anybody that's ever had any training, they want to call it soil. They say dirt is what you get on your shoes and underneath your fingernails. Soil is what you plant in.
Yeah, soil is a living organism, so to say, in their mind. Yeah. Dirt is just something you knock off your shoes.
We're not going to chastise you, Ernie, for saying it, because we just regular country folks, and we've said it all our lives. But you have to be a little bit careful when you're getting those formally trained mixed crowds like that, because they can't take it anymore. It just bothers them so bad they got to correct you. And I normally just shake my head and say, yes, ma'am, go along with it and go on.
Yeah, I've tried to be better since that customer combined got on to me pretty bad. I've been trying to be better about it on my videos, not saying dirt and saying soil. Dirt's just an easier word for me to say, but I understand that it bothers folks, and I understand the difference.
Oh, there. I do too, but that we was raised, it was just dirt and soil was all the same thing. But
right, it's.
We apologize in advance if we have offended anybody on that.
So. That's right. All right, well, that's going to do it for tonight. Before we leave, I wanted to do a little teaser. Next week's show, that we're probably going to talk about onions.
Man, ain't they pretty.
And look at them onion starts there. Them babies ain't long for needing to go in the ground.
I tested one of them yesterday. I pulled them out, and he was close.
They're very, very close.
Yep, that there ain't quite ready, but it's
close. But they getting there. And one thing to mention about these, the trays we sell are 162 trays. But we've got some of these that are 288s, and they work really well for onions. If you'd like for us to carry these 288s, let us know in the comments. We can get them, and they're the same quality as our 162s, but these things work really good for onions and leeks and things that you're going to transplant that are a little smaller. So we'll talk about these a little more next week, talk about onions and varieties and when and where, intermediate, short, long, all that good stuff. Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for tonight. If you haven't already done so, hit that subscribe button, hit that bell button, hit that thumbs up, give us a like, and we will see you guys next week.
Take care.